The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockle, right back with you here on 710 KNUS. Tons of texts coming in on our last topic. Some callers that are still hanging on. Some that have bailed to come back afterwards. I wanted to spend this time talking with a friend and someone who is at the head of an organization. And my guess is this isn't the first time, but it may be the last time he's had to deal with an organization that has suffered the tragedy that the El Paso County Sheriff's Office suffered. Joining us right now, all the way from down south, is Bill Elder, the sheriff for El Paso. Sir, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome, George. You're welcome. Thanks.
Now, I'd asked you specifically to come on because, one, I couldn't make it to the event yesterday, and that really bummed me out because I like going to those things to show support. And those tend to be very emotional, but at the same time, when you see all the different badges and uniforms from not just Colorado, but they tend to come from everywhere, showing up to stand in solidarity for a fallen brother or sister, there is something about that. It's more than comforting, but it's unifying in a way. And I miss that, so I apologize. But I wanted to have you on to talk about Deputy Peary. Before we get to him, though, tell us, in the time that you've been sheriff in El Paso County, how many of these things have you had to go to?
You know, I've done three myself. We, in 2018, we lost Micah Flick doing an arrest.
I remember that.
It was part of our battle group. In 2020, I lost a deputy in the jail, Jeff Hopkins, one of the very first people in Colorado to die from COVID. And I mean, that was just tragic. He contracted it in the jail, you know, where they're confined. And now, Andrew, it's been an interesting 3 years. I told people in the very beginning, I lost two friends early on in my career, and you know, that worked here. And I said, one of the things that I really don't want to do is have to be the sheriff over a line of duty death. And now I've done three.
How long you been a lawman, Bill?
I started in 1978, George.
Holy smokes.
Reserve. I went to the police academy, the Colorado Springs Police Academy in 1979. So, yeah, it's been a couple of days.
That's a long time. Any plans after you retire here at the end of the year?
You know, we're going to do we bought a home in Arizona a couple of years ago, and we're going to do some snowbirding. I'm going to do some consulting work.
Wow.
And so I'm going to do some of that for a little while. Going to do something, you know, other than cops and robbers for a bit.
Yeah, that'd probably be a nice break for your wife as well, especially since.
Yeah.
And that's the part we never really talk about until tragedy hits, is that's the impact on the family of being in the law business. Describe what that's been like. I should have your wife on, frankly. She's awesome. I should have her on to talk about this. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, you're right. It's been interesting. You know, we've got four kids and 10 grandkids, and short of only one of the girls worked for the sheriff's office for a very short stint. I've really wanted to have the kids do something else, and this has just been, it's been all I've done. It's all I know. Joy just retired a couple of years ago from the 4th Judicial District Attorney's Office. She was a victim's advocate, and boy, I can tell you, advocacy for victims is her heart. It's been a big thing for her. But after a couple of huge events down here, she did war on her forever. And so it's good to see her retire. She's kind of been doing this snowbirding thing, you know, for a while. So I'm excited to join her.
That's great. Let's get to the tough part, and that is to talk about what took place with Deputy Peary. For folks up here in the metro area, and I know it was covered here, TV, radio, newspaper, and all that, but for folks that weren't following it maybe as closely as El Paso did, actually, let's back up a minute. How big is your department? Deputy Peary is one of how many?
So I have 542 sworn personnel. I've got just shy of 900 employees.
And the reason for that difference in part, and I don't think people appreciate this, there's a big difference between police and sheriffs. Sheriffs are the county jailers, and that's required by law. You have to have a jail in every county. You're responsible for that, but also you're elected. And no knock on police chiefs who get appointed, your constituency is the community, right? It's different. Like, you answer directly to them. So you have 542 deputy peeries that are out there on a day-to-day basis trying to keep folks safe. What happened to Deputy Peary?
So they had he and a partner had been on a call of a suspicious incident that they thought there were some kids shooting in a in an area in Securities, which is south of Colorado Springs. They had responded to that. Turned out there was an airsoft game. Right after that, they were dispatched to a shots fired call. We were getting a number of calls for shots fired. They responded, code 3 or lights and siren. As soon as they arrived, they spotted a woman laying in the grass, injured. They got out of the car and were immediately hit with gunfire, and Deputy Peary died. There'll be a lot more that comes out about the circumstances, but the point is that without thought for his safety, his partner without thought of his safety, they got out of their cars to render aid and to try and do what they could to assist this other victim, Alexandra Paz. And Deputy Peary lost his life because of that.
Did she survive?
No, she did not. She was she died as well. But here's the thing: this is not just your ordinary, you know, cop, if there is such a thing. You know, this kid, he joined the Army right after he graduated high school.
Good man.
He was in the airborne, finished airborne school, and he was been to the Army's primary leadership development course. You know the gig there,
yep,
the
PLDC,
non-commissioned officers course. He was a member of the 173rd Airborne. He'd served three combat tours in Iraq.
Oh my.
Yeah, he had been engaged in the development and execution of over 600 operations in Iraq. And you know, that's a big deal.
Oh,
he had an Iraqi campaign medal with 4 campaign stars.
Oh.
He was a parachutist, meritorious service medals, Army commendation medals. He had a parachutist badge with Bronze Star. And you served. You know what that
means.
Yes,
yep.
This is a tough as nails kid. He was as good as they get. And you know, he'd been with us for a number of years. He'd served a couple of years before he came to us with Bakersfield Police Department. His dad was a cop for 20 years with LAPD. His brother just retired as a sergeant with Bakersfield.
Wow.
He was on our SWAT team, our gang unit. He was a field training officer. Just an amazing guy, and had a number of different awards with our agency. He was not a rookie, and that's the thing, is this is a dangerous job anymore.
For this guy and others that are like him, and the description, of course, is heroic. There's something about this that, Sheriff, you inherit, like, from their self-selection to serve. Like, you cannot instill in someone through any amount of training, whatever that hero gene is, whatever that idea that you just described, that these two men popped out of their car and without concern for their own safety, rushed to someone else to try to help them. Someone else who, my guess is, they don't know, they've never met before. There's something about that comes from, I don't know if it's upbringing or DNA or something like that. But when you can attract those people to the job, the community is that much better.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Yeah, they had no idea who she was. In fact, I don't think they even knew her name. I don't think that's in the call screen by the time that they arrived. They're there just to help, right? I mean, they're there to do what they can to help the community. And, you know, and I've got a group of these. I mean, there's so many people that work for my agency that have this kind of pedigree and this kind of training, and they love their jobs. They just want to do it safely is the best that they can do. And, you know, we spend millions of dollars a year on doing, getting them things so that they can do their job safely. And the world is just getting more and more violent at home. Here's a kid that spends all this time overseas, right, in the middle of battle, in Iraq, and doing all these other really, really dangerous things, comes home so that he can live a life, leaves Bakersfield for the safety of Colorado Springs, and he loses his life in the United States, in a town like Colorado Springs, in El Paso County, after doing all of the dangerous things he's done to, you know, to preserve the country that we live in.
This is a guy, too, who, after high school, in the freest, most prosperous nation in the world, where you can do just about anything you want to do, said, I think I'm going to go join the military. Now, just based off of his age, it tells me that he did that after September 11th. So that's a little different for me, right? Like, this is a guy who stuck up his hand when he knew the chances were he was going to go get sent over to the sandbox. That's an amazing thing.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, and he, his, like I said, his family heritage with his dad and his brother, also served in the military. And they, he talked yesterday during the service, his brother Matt did, about how they were competitive growing up and how Andrew had done everything he had done just a little bit better. And he talked about that gold, that bronze star on his jump badge and that being his mustard stain, and harassed Matt about it. And Matt's the older brother. But boy, I'll tell you, it just breaks your heart to see things like that. And it impacts our ability to recruit and hire people as well. They see that this is a dangerous job.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Before we get into that recruiting aspect of this thing and what you're experiencing over the last few years, and we're talking with El Paso County Sheriff Bill Elder. Deputy Andrew Peary, we've heard about his background. We've heard about his early years and his life. Does he have a family that he's leaving behind?
He does, George. He was married to Megan. He has two kids, Matthew and Amy, that he leaves behind. Matt is 16. Amy is 13. Just amazing kids. They're, you know, they've now inherited a couple thousand dads. They, one of the SWAT guys that spoke yesterday, said, we will be there on that first date and we will have that talk. I would not want to be the first guy that asked out Amy. That's going to be a tough gig right there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's special. I can't imagine though, his wife now, you know, moving forward.
You know, you're right, and the interesting thing is the wives of these the fallen officers, and this we've seen this around the state. You know, whenever these officers' wives fall, people gather around them. The other wives gather around them. They help them get through. You know, the outpouring from this community has been absolutely amazing. The outpouring and the calls and the emails of support from not only this community, but around the state and around the country. I mean, I heard, I got a phone call on my personal cell phone number from the director of the FBI.
Oh, wow.
And you know, wishing us well. You know, I got your call. I got calls from every general that's assigned here.
Oh, that's
great. We have five military bases in El Paso County. And every general, I had calls from senators, congressmen, business leaders from around the community stepping up to help, to do anything that they can. It's just, it's unbelievable the amount of support that this community and, you know, the community around the country does. And I'm sure everybody that has a fallen officer feels the same way. It's just, this is the one thing I didn't want to do in my career, and I certainly don't want to do it in the waning days of my career, so...
Well, talk about the recruiting piece in this way. That even before Deputy Peary was murdered, there was this feel that, and maybe it's statistically proven too, there was this feel that there was a significant drop-off in recruiting, and not by effort on part of law enforcement, but by interest from the community in becoming law enforcement officers. What are you seeing and feeling out there, and what do you attribute it to?
Well, you know, I think, George, you're absolutely right, and for us, it's really not a feel. It's a dramatic downturn that started back in about the early 2020 timeframe. The numbers of people that are interested in jobs in the has dropped dramatically, and it's not just here. It's all over the country. I read Perf Clips, the Police Executive Research Forum clips every morning. I share those with my staff. It is routine anymore to have conversations about the drop in manpower, hundreds and hundreds of vacancies. We struggle mightily to do that. And then you add to it, you know, the issue of, like you said earlier, we've got a staff at jail. And so everybody that we hire starts in the jail. And we do that because, you know, while when somebody on patrol calls needs assistance, we can always lean on other agencies that we, A, partner with, and B, we dispatch for, because I dispatch for every other law enforcement and fire agency in El Paso County, with the exception of CSPD. And so we can lean on them for support. When those guys in the jail call for help, that help better be in the building and on its way. And so, you know, we're very cognizant about our staffing model in the jail and how many we keep in there. It's an 1,830-bed facility, and it stays busy all the time. It is full of dangerous, dangerous people.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, we try to keep that going. Recruiting has been our number one issue over the last – my entire career, my entire term as the sheriff. And we've done a lot of things. We've done a lot of things to incent people to work here in El Paso County, but it's a tough gig.
When you look at the numbers, and you said you're 500, I'm going to screw this up, 500 and how many?
542.
There's a natural attrition that occurs just from people who leave the profession for one reason or another, other people that retire after a certain period of time. Are you guys going to be able to continue to refresh that pool that you need with the high quality officers that you have? And I know the answer wants to be, yes, of course, the community doesn't need to worry. But are you concerned at all looking down the road? Like, dang, I don't want to lower my standards, but I need more bodies.
You're exactly right. Yeah, and I am worried about it, and our staff is worried about it. Our normal attrition rate, and I think the attrition rate consistently across the board for most law enforcement agencies is in the 6 to 8% annually. And I think that's what we've been dealing with. In the last 2 years, we're watching that attrition rate jump to the 10 to 12, sometimes 15%. We have some big months. We will see a higher attrition rate after this event. We'll get through this funeral, but we will lose a number of people, and not just cops, dispatchers, because those people that are on the other end of that radio, they're the helpless responders, right? I mean, they're first responders, but they don't get to respond.
Right.
They're the ones that have to listen to the phone calls and the countless calls from all the people that heard the gunfire and were calling to report or whatever. They got to hear the radio calls from the cops on scene. Those are the people, the unsung heroes in this process. And those are the ones that we're going to have a bigger problem, I think,
wow,
in our comm center. It takes a year from somebody that is hired to be in our comm center to the time that they are on their own. We go through an incredible amount of training to try and get them right, and a lot of them just don't make it. So it's another problem.
Well, listen, then with the time that we have, sell it, Sheriff. I mean, if you're speaking to someone right now, if not them, then maybe they have a son or a daughter or a brother or a sister who fits this bill. Why should somebody consider a career in law enforcement, if not specifically El Paso County Sheriff?
Well, I started this gig in 1978. I was a volunteer 21-year-old kid that wanted to be engaged in public service. I have loved this job. I love this community. I grew up here. My kids grew up here. My grandkids grew up here. I'm a product of Palmer High School, whether that's a good or bad thing. this is my way of contributing to my community. This has never really felt like a job. And I can tell you that even though we talk about these dangerous things there is so, so many other reasons to get up each and every day, to be part of the solution, to be part of how you commit to your community. We see people every day sign up to go into the military. They go into the military, they go down to, you know, wherever it is they're going to go to get trained, and they learn to be trained killers, right? We send them all over the world to be trained killers. And you can do just that. You can join up to a local law enforcement agency. You can get paid great money. Our cops, when they top out, make almost 90 grand a year.
Well, that's great.
Great benefits.
And retirement. There's retirement, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you stick it out and you get to retirement. You get a pretty good gig in retirement. And the thing is, you get to help people each and every day. You get to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. You get to engage with people. You get to do community events, and you get to kiss babies and shake hands, and you get to see all of the amazing people around our communities that absolutely adore and support law enforcement.
Well, if I were a younger man, I would consider doing it. The closest I could get to law enforcement was to be a district attorney, and Michael Allen is a great guy, but I think he would admit there's just something different about being our end of the criminal justice process. You guys are the ones that make the biggest difference. There's just no question in my mind that the decisions and responses that you guys make in those early moments of those things either result in no case or a prosecutable case or something in between. And it's just, I can't thank you enough for spending time this morning, coming on, talking to us about Andrew and the profession itself. I'd have you on anytime.
I appreciate that, George. You know, we've been friends for a long time, and you should be our governor. I told you that before. you should have been our attorney general. That's what we campaigned about. You know, you're a good man. Thank you for your service. You're no joke either, and people need to know that. You're the real deal, and I appreciate everything you've done and continue to do, on your podcast and on the radio.
I appreciate that, man, and hi to your wife for me, would you?
I'll do the same thing. Let's catch
do
lunch
soon.
Sometime.
We'll do it on a better note. On a better note.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks, brother.
Thank you. Hey, that's Sheriff Bill Elder from El Paso County. We went a little bit long, but it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart, point of professional privilege, and I get to do that when I come on the air here. When we come back, we still have Joan on hold. We'll open up those phone lines. Frankly, if you wanted to talk about law enforcement, Deputy Peary, I will take those as well. The conversation we were having beforehand was really about Liz Cheney and Wyoming and how necessary it is or it isn't. To have her purged from the party, I think she's going to lose. There have been some texts that have voiced concern about how many Democrats have come over. Other texts that I'll share with you as well. People love the name calling, it turns out. Not gutsy enough to call in on the phone and have a conversation, but love to throw out the anonymous texts. When we come back, we'll explore some of that. You, me, texters, callers, George Brockman on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here on 710 KNUS. My thanks to Sheriff Bill Elder from El Paso County. I will continue to have those conversations as these horrible events continue to happen, and I hope they'd never happen again. It'd be great if we could finish up however long we're permitted to be on radio here with that being our first and only interview with someone over a fallen officer. But it's a profession, I'm telling you, we're going to weather this storm. This has happened before. 70s, I imagine, but we'll weather this storm. But the conspiracy, if you will, of events between the violence that befalls some officers on the job, the defund the police garbage that you hear from folks, I was going to say on the left, but now it's from the right as well, the maligning of law enforcement and their motives, the painting of an entire profession, even agencies over the conduct of a few. That's the kind of stuff that dissuades people from doing the things that we need. And we take it for granted, right? We just take it for granted that if we ever needed help from our fellow man, because our fellow man can be pretty freaking evil, that we're going to be able to pick up the phone and the good guys are going to show up and do everything they can to save our lives. Well, you know, if people stop sticking up their hand to say, hey, I want to take on that job, the chances of that happening get smaller and smaller. I'm just not sure that makes us a better, safer people, but we'll have that conversation in the future. I want to get right back to our phone lines here because Joan has been so super patient. I think she's been on hold for a month Joan, you're on 710 KNUS. Thanks for hanging on.
Yep. It's a rainy day, and it's nice. So the first thing I wanted to say is that I'm very sorry about El Paso's loss. And I do have people in law enforcement in my family. And I did go last Saturday and walked in the Carnation Parade in Wheat Ridge.
Oh, really?
And there was a huge turnout for Ed Brady.
Oh, wow. Ed Brady, good man. I've known Ed for in a quarter century, back when he was like 21 Jump Street for the drug guys. And he still looks like he's 10. I mean, if you saw him, Joan, you know he looks like he's a child. But he's actually probably just about as old as I am, which is crazy.
Yeah, and there were over 100 Republicans walking for various parties. And Heidi was with us. And
oh, great.
It was very well received. And it was kind of interesting because there was not very many Democrats in the parade. And the one interesting Democrat float was the Democrats for Equity.
Whatever that means. I mean,
I know.
What does that word even mean?
I don't know, but they weren't happy to see us, that's for sure.
No, and I think that maybe the left has decided to move away from parades and just into protests. Like, that's it. That is their parade, right? Protests. When they march down the street and deface the state capitol and set fire to things and take on the cops. That is their parade.
Yeah, I think you might be right there. But the real reason I called was to let you know how I feel about Liz Cheney. I do have a lot of people that are in Wyoming. I actually spend some time in Wyoming. I know a really good DA in Wyoming. It's a friend. I think I could have been supportive of Liz until
tell me
she
what
started
was that moment.
Well, you know, she voted on her principles, and I understand that. But the moment she started being part of the hearings, and the hearings were not bipartisan, and the hearings were actually produced. And the hearings had cut and was they were propaganda. They were just propaganda. And nobody listened. I think that was the really interesting thing about it all, is that we all turned on and went, oh, this is just fake.
I listened to the opening statements just because I want, if that's what they were, because I wanted to hear where they thought they were going with all of this. And, you know, Liz was out front and center on that. She was the tip of the spear. Now, I know on paper it was bipartisan, but I agree with you that that did not make it fair in the bipartisan way that we expect, because both she and Kinzinger had voted for impeachment and they were anti-Trumpers. So if the entire committee is anti-Trump, and I really don't care the reasons why that happened, that's irrelevant to me. It's instantly going to make the things that they do and the things that they say, whether they're accurate or not, seem suspect. And that was just an optical error. And the other thing, Joan, you brilliantly brought up was they brought out people from Hollywood to produce this thing. Once that gets out into the public stream, then you're like, oh boy, what are we doing? This isn't about getting to the truth. This is about some sort of a production to get us to a conclusion.
And she lost all credibility from me. And I was really grateful that the Wyoming GOP removed her from their membership, because that would be the principled thing to do. And
why do you say that? And I ask you that in this context. You disagree with Liz. I get it. Is it possible, and I've been having a text conversation with a good friend here on my own phone during this, and that is, could she believe, as a matter of principle and truth, that Donald Trump is unfit to serve as president, and that what happened on January the 6th lays at his feet, not so much because he knew it was going to happen and planned it, but because she believes he had an obligation to intervene before he did, and in a manner much more vigorous than he did? Could she truly believe that and have voted her conscience, and does that matter to you?
You know, I have some really mixed feelings about January 6th. I had friends that went. Some of the things that have gone on since, I have a real hard time having I call them political prisoners, still in prison after 2 years, and I don't know why you would find that something tolerable.
No, I don't understand that either. I don't know what's going on there. I don't understand the procedure being employed there.
And the thing of it is that, you know, they were there, and none of them I knew went into the building. None of them. Some of them were there. Some of them were identified. Some of them got to talk to the FBI. A couple of them had some really horrid experiences. And the only reason, and this is the absolute truth, the only reason I wasn't there was because I had gone in December to Florida to celebrate a birthday with my good friend, and I have a budget for traveling. So, and so I said, no, I can't go. It's, you know, the end of the year budget is, I mean, there's a lot of people, there are a lot of people that don't understand how you can be fiscally sound, because you sit down and you put things on paper and you say, this is how much money I'm going to spend this year and only this much money. And that's, you know, something you'll never see with Congress is a balanced budget.
I just wonder if we were getting to a point, and maybe it's unique to President Trump, but we're getting to a point where it is a cult of personalities thing. And it is less about what Donald Trump did in office and whatever principles that he stood for than it is the man himself. And I say that because I've never seen another political figure that people excuse every single aspect of his conduct regardless. Now, every party's inclined to want to defend their guy. But, I mean, even Democrats will say on the side, I can't believe that Sleepy Joe is out there sniffing hair and stuff like that. And he's got that creepy sort of hands on the shoulders of the little girls thing. They'll even suggest that. They'll even talk about how abysmal he has been in communication throughout the... But with the president, it doesn't matter what he does. And so when you get to someone like Liz Cheney, who isn't just like, I don't like him as a person, I presume she doesn't like him as a person, but that I truly believe that what he did was an impeachable offense. If the answer to that is for us as a party, is that we will purge all those people who've acted out of principle when we disagree with them on fact, does that make us better? I mean, is the goal here to purge everyone to support Trump, or is it to purge everyone to support a principle? And if the what's the principle here, Joan?
I think that for some time, for a long time, the difference between the Democrat Party and the Republican Party is that the Republican Party has been very open to thought, very open to somebody that's not on the same page, somebody that is kind of out there. I think that's one of the reasons why the FBI is like, oh, there's crazies out there. There's crazies out there. And I don't think there are, but they're trying to paint us that way, because we actually stand up at Tea Party meetings. We actually say things. We actually call into talk radio. Do you think talk radio can do anything with Democrats?
No, I think they've proven time and again that model doesn't work. Joan, I have gone long with you because you were so, so patient in staying on. Love having the chat with you. Thank you for this.
Well, thank you. And I do believe it's time for Republicans to stand together.
Thanks, Joan. I appreciate that. And I know there's other callers that are calling in that are going to have similar thoughts. I just want to know, is this something that has to happen? Do we need to purge the party of anyone who's anti-Trump? Is that the goal here? I've seen a bunch of texts. I'll read some of them to you after we come back, after we talk with our buddy Brian Gray at Alpine. But there is a real effort by a handful of people to be like, oh, you're a rhino. If you disagree with the Trump thing, if you happen to say anything that's remarkably complimentary of Liz Cheney, you are a rhino, 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 rhino. That becomes the label of those who cannot debate on any substantive issue. But we'll talk about some of those things. Before we do that, though, I want to tell you about Bingo Reverse Mortgage. I'd spent a long time hearing about this on the radio, didn't know what it was until our folks at Bingo Reverse Mortgage came on and said, listen, we want to make people smarter on this. This is such a grand opportunity for people who are over the age of 55, because it allows them to get a reverse mortgage to tap into that great equity that they've been building up in their house for 10, 20, 30 years to take a little bit of the edge off of inflation, and that's not going anywhere. I realized the president was like, yay, it was 0% for a month, but it was still up 8-point-something over the year before. That's a big, big, big inflation number. It can be your ace in the hole, too, for other things like retirement. Don't feel like you have enough to retire? Maybe you do, and it's just trapped in your house, and the folks at Bringo Reverse Mortgage can help you get it. The benefits are incredible. Get the safety net you deserve. Call them today at 720-541-5545 or visit bingoreversemortgage.com. If you tell them I sent you, you get a hug. No, that's not true. I made that up. But what you do get is a free appraisal reimbursed at closing. That's $750. That's a $750 value. That may be better than a hug. I don't know. BingoReverseMortgage.com. Equal housing lender. Call 720-541-5545 for cost information and conditions. Licensed in Colorado. NMLS. ID number 226-8418. When we come back, Brian Gray, Alpine Planning. Fingers are crossed that the market is just crushing it. We'll find out right after this. George Brockman on The George Show. 710 KNUS. Well, there's no need to be jealous. You're on here with 710 KNUS, George Brockler on The George Show. It's that time of the show. Get yourselves ready. Get your pens out, if you still write with a pen, and take down the notes from the great information that we get from the one, the only, Brian Gray from Alpine Planning. Sir, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, George. How are we doing?
Good. No pressure, but the information you give right now may save the economy.
Well, where's Amy and Gabe? Every time I get on the radio, I get to start off with the negative stuff.
Oh.
No, we're doing all right. So we're looking at the Dow. The Dow is trying to get its footing going. It's up 15 points right now. The S&P is down 8, so basically flat. And then our good NASDAQ is down about 72 points. But if you take a look at the big picture, just kind of step back, we're seeing the Dow currently on its longest winning streak in almost 3 months. Last week, the S&P 500 climbed 3.3% for the fourth straight weekly gain, while the Dow climbed 2.9%, the NASDAQ was up 3.1%. The reason I bring those numbers up, when we're starting to take a look at our numbers over the past, let's say, 3 years, 5 years, and even a month-to-date trailing, we're starting to see some positive numbers. So that's a good thing. So maybe we're slowly starting to come out of this little fishbowl that we're in. We've stuck to our allocations. We have made some small changes here and there, but by not totally redoing the portfolio or overhauling it, we're starting to see the numbers come back. So with 4 months left to go in this year, you know, we're still down right at that double-digit mark on the Dow. Maybe we can potentially get this thing closer to flat or even finish up the year 1% or 2%. That's not out of the question.
What is it that you think we're going through right now? Like traditionally, and maybe you still say this, you would say, mm-hmm. I think we're in a recession based on the old definition, but there is just such reluctance by the White House as well as some of the economists that are supportive saying, no, there's too many other things that are going on that are positive. We can't call it a recession. What is it?
I think a lot of it's due to the election cycle that we're going through right now. Like you said, there's so much bad press out there on both sides. They don't want to add this in there. And then if you take a look, Walmart came out today. Walmart just slashed their prices even more. And those steep discounts encourage spending for the earning outlook moving forward. So I think people are starting to ignore some of the negative data that's coming out of China. I know I was gone last week, and where I was, there was no lack of spending.
Really?
And hotels were full. Airplanes were full. It was incredible. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit of that COVID. I'm tired of, you know, being cooped up for 2 years. Or maybe we're just slowly starting to crawl out of this thing. But yeah, we probably are in a recession. You can almost for sure say that for sure. But the numbers are still looking good and they're trending in the right way. And that's why you got to stay in the game, George.
Man, I really appreciate that. And I am, I don't know if cautiously optimistic is the right term or not. I mean, there's a part of me, Brian, and I don't need you to comment on this part politically, that's like, I don't want things to get too good too fast because it might, you know, it might stymie some of the political ambitions of folks that think like I do. But on the same hand, I'm like, listen, I'm in the private sector now, man. I mean, when I was the DA, the economy could do whatever it wants. I'm still drawing a paycheck. But now, oh, no, it matters, brother. I know you're living in it, but it's like I need the economy to do well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will comment on that. We do need the economy to do well. We do need the markets to do well. That way we can boost that consumer confidence, and then obviously they're going to want to be putting more towards retirement. Problem is, we haven't been putting as much away towards retirement. That's what scares me, because that's what we're going to see 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, where people are coming up short, and we just don't have the economic system to, you know, supplement this many people, especially when Social Security, you know, they're saying they're going to go broke in, what, five to seven years.
Oh, jeez.
So, you know, a lot of things going on out there right now, and this is where you really want to sit down and just kind of regroup and say, all right, what do I want to accomplish for the next 4 months, and let's get it pen to paper, and let's get it done.
Oh, man, I appreciate that. Alpine Planning Group is a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to improving your long-term financial success. Investing is a matter of trust, and they are prepared to earn yours. Call them today at 303-843-0918, 303-843-0918. Thanks, Brian.
All right, have a good one.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
A bunch of texts that have been coming in that we've been talking about, some topics here with Liz Cheney mostly, and I want to continue that conversation with you. There's some things that we'll throw into the mix as well, updates on the Mar-a-Lago stuff, but here's some text. There is no difference between Democrats and Republicans. Proof is when either party gets the House, Senate, and president, they never get things done. They both hate Trump because he's not either. Maybe, the last part maybe, but in terms of getting the House and the Senate and the presidency, they actually do get things done. And the proof is all this stuff that Biden has just rammed through. Right? I mean, you can disagree and I disagree. I think these bills are atrocious. When Manchin caved in and Sinema caved in and their Build Back Better mini plan that they have, what an incredible waste of money and more fuel on the inflation fire. That was a joke. But they were able to do it because they had all those three things. Remember Obama with Obamacare. That only happened in the waning days of them having control of everything before it went back to Republicans and we had that divided government for a time. We've had great success with having certain control over, for instance, the Senate and the House and the presidency. I don't know if you remember all the Supreme Court justices we were able to get in. That's kind of a big deal. And that even took place after we lost the House. So it's not that they don't get anything done. I don't believe that. They never get anything done when there's divided government. And for me, I'm okay with that. I don't want an active federal government. I'd like our state and local government to play a bigger role in my life than those folks out there in the swamp. That is our goal. That's my opinion. That's what our goal should be. Listen, when we come back, we'll talk more Liz Cheney to you. Is this necessary? Is this what we need to do to purge the party? And is it for principle or is it for personality? When we come back, 303-696-1971. George Brockner on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.